So we are in the middle of Perek Lamed Gimel in Bereishis, which, of course, is the encounter between Yaakov and Esav. And we have, over the course of this Perek, many examples of Yaakov trying to show favor to Esav. So there is one pasuk in particular that the Gemara picks up on, although everybody points out that there is many other pesukim here that one could point out for this issue as well. But the pasuk says in pasuk Yud, Perek Lamed Gimel pasuk Yud, Vayomer Yaakov al na im na matzasi chen beinecha, I'll find favor in your eyes. V'lakachta min chasi miyadi, you'll take my gift from me. Ki al kein ra'isi panecha, I see in your face. Kiroz pene elukim vatirtzeni, like the vision of the face of God, vatirtzeni, and it is appealed to me, it has appeased me. How does it translate vatirtzeni? It has appeased me, or I've appeased
you, were,
and you have been appeased. Good.
But so, Yaakov is saying this.
Yaakov says that to Esav. So the Gemara.
After a kiss?
No. This is after, right. This is after they embrace already. But there are several psukim there. Where, it seems that the interpretation, we talked about this last week, is that Esav was ready to kill him, and Yaakov was actually able to convince him at the last minute that would not be such a great idea. So this leads into a discussion of, or this pasuk itself figures prominently in the discussion of a prohibition of Hanifa. Anybody ever heard of Hanifa before? Hanifa is, what?
Sounds like a brand of yogurt.
Hanicha is a form of yogurt. Haven't heard that before. Okay. But the word chanifa is to the word is flattery, to the prohibition of giving a false or maybe not false flattery to people. So there is such a thing called chanifa. So that starts, and this pasuk comes up, please prominently in that discussion. Okay, so you talked about a gripas hamelach and the
whole thing in like
4 days
of it.
4 days. Oh, so you're experts already. I don't know. Sorry, that's what we got prepared for today. So the Gemara tells us there's a Mishnah in Masechta Sota. Maybe there'll be one or two things which you can cover. So the Mishnah Masechta Sota says, Agrippa's Melch Amad Vekibel Vekara Omei, that the King Agrippa would rise and he would say the Torah. Agrippa was a little, there were two Agrippas, it's unclear which one this was, but he was a little bit before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash or a little bit, or over during the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But he was a king and he would, he would do the hakel on Sukkos. So shibchu chachamim, and the sages gave him praise for doing such a thing.
You're talking about Tanner.
What?
The grandson of
yes, of Hordus. Yes. But when he got up to the pasuk that says you should not place upon you a foreigner as a king, right? Zalgu ein of the mouse, his eyes would flow with tears. So Amrullo, the people said to him, Atisyari Agrippas, Achinuata Achinuata. They told him, oh, don't worry, Agrippas, you're our brother, you're our brother. That's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah doesn't necessarily give a character judgment on that activity. But that's what it. That's what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara comes along and says that Tana Mishmei the Rebbe Nasan. This is in Sota Daf Mem Aleph Amabez. Biosa Shah. At that moment, at that time, Nischayvu Soni Yisrael Kalayah. The enemies of Israel became liable to destruction. Who are the enemies of Israel? The Jews themselves. The Jews themselves are referred to in the Gemara as Soni Yisrael. Why Shechnifu Lola Agrippas? Because they flattered Agrippas. That was an inappropriate thing to say to Agrippas. So the Gemara continues on and says,
he was foreign? He was a foreign?
No, it says a descendant from Herod, who was descendant.
So it's unclear whether he
convert.
Right. Either he might have converted, which would have him be a problem as being a king, or his mother, only his mother was Jewish, his father was not Jewish, which might also not allowed to be king, or maybe just make it inappropriate for him to be the king. But one way or so, and that itself is a little bit unclear whether he was actually really able to and was just considered an embarrassment to the Jews that he was king, or whether he really shouldn't have been king at all. That's all a that's part of this discussion that takes place over the course of the Gemara and the Rishonim, and trying to understand
it. Can't be king.
A ger should not, right, cannot be a king. So the Gemara.
The mother was Jewish, there's no question about that. The father.
Right. Right. So the Gemara continues on and says, so it then has a discussion. This is Miyom Shagavar Agrupas Ashel Hanufa. On the day that the power of flattery prevailed, Nisavdu Hadinim, the judgments became perverted, Niskalkalu Hamaisim, and the actions were corrupted. Vein Adam Yachalom El Chavero, Maisi Gedomi Maasecha. My actions are greater than your actions. Nobody was able to say that. What does that mean? So the interpretation of that probably is that nobody could recognize what was considered good actions, what was considered bad actions. It became very difficult to decipher what was considered good and what was considered bad. Then the Gemara has a discussion and says, well, some people actually say maybe it's a good idea to give Hanifa to flatter Rishayim in this world. Why? That way they'll get some of the pleasure in this world and they'll lose it in Olam Haba. The Gemara makes that comment. Then the Gemara says, "Upliga de Rabbi Levi," and one of the sources for that is what? Our pasuk, right? Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Omer Mehacha. We learn out from here. Kiros Pene Elukim Matir Seni. The very fact that Yaakov said to Esav these very nice words, "Oh, it's like seeing the face of as I look at your face, it's like seeing the face of an angel." So it sounds like Hanifa is mutter. That's what it sounds like. That's what Rav Shimon ben Lakish says. So the Gemara then says, however, upliga de Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi disagrees with that. Rabbi Levi explains, no. What was Yaakov saying to Esav? Mashal lamad davar doma. It's a parable compared to la'adam shezimin es chavero. Her friend invites his friend to a feast. And the guest realizes that why has he been invited? He's been invited because the host wants to kill him. He wants to make him the feast, right? So la'adam shezimin es chavero v'hikibot shemavakish lahorgo. So Amar Lo, the guest says, tam tafshil ze shani toim ki tafshil sheta'amti beveis hamelach. The flavor of this dish that I'm tasting is like the dish that I tasted in the king's house when I was there for I had dinner with the king a couple weeks ago. So Amar, he says, Yadale Malka, he thinks to himself, oh, this guy knows the king. Nistape delokatule. So maybe he'll be afraid and he's not going to kill him. So that's really what Yaakov was doing to Esav. Yaakov was afraid that Esav was going to kill him. Yaakov says, your face looks like that of the angels, implying that, you know, how do I know what angels' faces look like? Oh, because I talk to them. We actually hang out often with the angels. So they better watch out for me. So that's really what Yaakov was doing. So it wasn't that Yaakov was flattering Esav, says Rabbi Levi, but rather he was trying to intimidate Levi. Implication being is that it is permitted, and that's what the Torah Tamim points out on this pasuk, it is permitted to do Hanifa in order to save one's life. And Torah Tamim adds in, although it's unclear what his source is, in order to save your money. And if somebody it sounds like somebody going to rob you, take away your money, so to flatter that person sounds like it is permissible.
Is that why everybody flatters their boss?
So hold on a minute. Let's take this slow. So that's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara, so Tosfos on that daf in the Gemara points out that yes, that in a makom sakana it is permissible. How do I know that it's permissible in a place of sakana? So I would have said, what do you mean? It sounds like from this Gemara that it's mutter in a case of sakana. That seems to be what Yaakov was doing, right? Yaakov was giving a flattery, and it sounds like Yaakov was in a difficult sakana. So Tosfos goes on and says, no, it's from a Gemara in the Darim. That's where we prove it from. What's the Gemara in the Darim? So the Gemara in the Darim has this strange story that Ula was going from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Ula was one of the Amorayim, so he's traveling. Right, he's traveling eastward. Right, Islavu le tartin bnei Chozai b'hadik. So two people from Chozai come and travel with him. So come Chad. Shachtil Chavre. So one of them gets up, kills his friend. Okay? What? Backseat driver. No, I don't know. It doesn't say why he was killed, but one of them killed the friend. So I'm like, Ula, Ya'us Avdi. So he turns to Ula and says, Nu Ula, did I do right? Did I do a good thing? So Amar Lei, he says, Ain, yeah. Ufra Lei, Beis Hashkita. Yes, you did. And you should expose the slit in his throat. Why should you expose the slit in his throat? Because that way he'll die faster. Right, so he all of a sudden sense that this has some interesting ramifications otherwise. Right. But he says, let him die fast and he'll be out of his agony. So he asks the comment to Rabbi Yochanan, Amrle, so an Ula comes to Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, Dilma chasu shalom, achziki yadei over avera. He says, perhaps I strengthened the hand of sinners. Right? I told him it was okay. And it really isn't okay. I was over on Hanifa. So Amrle, nafsha chitzalt. He says, well, you were saving your life. So perhaps that's why it's okay. So we see from Tosfos points out, we see from here that you're permitted to do chanifa in order to save one's life.
But you may be next if you don't want
to. You might have been next. So that raises a bit of an issue. Why does Tosfos have to go there? We see Yaakov himself. Yaakov is trying to do this in order to save you. So what really is the prohibition of Hanifa? So to that, I give out those copied pages. Tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, if you see the section where it says Simen Nun Aleph, so Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the following important question. One can relate this to many different incidences, Bizman Azeh, but this is the question asked from Rav Shemaya Aryeh Eckstein. I don't know who he is, but you can just see from the title the issue. Be'inyan l'chavid be'eza kavod b'veis haknesas le'echad shuhu mi'ovri avera v'harbim tzrichim lo l'refua v'chidome. That you have a guy in the shul, can we honor him even though he is an ovri avera, he violates sins, but people require his doctoring. He is a doctor for the community. Right, so he's a very valuable member of the community. So what exactly is the question? So Rav Moshe, in the first paragraph here, spells it out pretty clearly what the issue is. He says, Hinei bedavar rofe, this is in Or Chaim Chelik Beis Simen Nun Aleph. Hinei bedavar rofe Yehudi me hamifursamim shebe medina, that he's one of the famous doctors in the country. Sherabim tzrichim lo leyos pihiskarvus osa. Many people want to be close to him. V'hu ish ba midos racham emut staka bofen gadol. Right? He's very righteous and he's very giving. V'gam osa harbe tovus l'yonei akila. He helps the congregation out very much. There's only one problem. Aval hu nasoi nachris. He married a non-Jew. He married a Gentile. Therefore, we don't give him any kavod in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaKnesses. We don't let him do anything. And the Rofe figured this out. And he's begun to separate from the congregation. And he's been hardened by this. V'lachein rotzim, as you've asked, Kaftof Reshe, Veroshe Ha'ir, L'chavdo L'pamim B'psichas V'segir Sa'aron L'chadome. So he figured, we'll let him open and close the Aron. V'gama Hosef, and he adds in the questioner, L'hayar Shemitzad Ha'kbiduso Al Anshe Ha'ir Baror Shirak Kolzman She'imo Hazakena She'shomeres Torah B'chayim Osem Asha Osel Tovas Hakal. Then the all other issue is that people realize that the only reason he's connected to the congregation at all right now is because his mother is a firm woman, and his mother pushes him to. Even though people are tough with him. After his mother dies, right, he's going to separate from the congregation via hefsid gadol akal, and this is going to be a big loss for the shul bichlal in general, uli yachidim befrat, and for individuals, it's going to be a loss for the shul in general because he probably gives a lot of money. It's going to be a loss for individuals by themselves because they need his doctoring. They want to know my thoughts about the matter. That's the shaila, right? So you can transpose this shaila to all different sorts of situations. Now, just a word about not honoring somebody in shul that violates certain averos. So we've heard of these things. These things exist, that we don't give certain kavods to people who violate various prohibitions. So either Shabbos, they violate the Shabbos, or intermarry, they married out, or there's a Rabbi Rakefa talks about a shul in London that is in the Eruv, in the Golders Green Eruv, but the rabbi of the shul doesn't hold of the Eruv. So the rule in the shul is that if you carry on Shabbos, if you use the Eruv on Shabbos, you're not entitled to an aliyah in the shul. And the story goes, Rabbi Rakefa says that one time a person came to shul with a cane. And they didn't realize that he had come to shul with a cane. And he gave him an aliyah, not realizing that he came to shul with a cane. And the rabbi found out about it, and he made them redo the entire leaning. Because it was one of the aliyahs was gotten by somebody who used the cane to get to shul, which might be mutter even without an eruv, but to use the cane to get to shul, even though there was an eruv. So what is the purpose of all of these things? So the truth is there's the old purpose and there's the newer purpose. The older purpose is that there was a concern that somebody who violates prohibitions before Hesya in public, so they are considered kofer. They are considered people that have gone against Torah and they lose their privileges of being Jews. So that is the way that halacha was understood and used for many hundred.
To me, there's a big difference. It's quite different.
Okay, he is publicly
you're shunning the whole congregation.
Well, there's an idea called not necessarily in public, but more of a there's an issue of b'tayavon versus the other term is the. B'tayavon versus what I say, that you're a mechal b'tayavon versus a mechal the words escaping me right now.
So to
fill
your appetite.
So a person that eats not kosher because they can't, they're starving and they really have a desire for it. Yeah. They succumb to their desires. So that's considered a mechal b'tayavon. That they have violated, that's a considered a lower level. But a higher level is that they know that it's wrong and that they're still violating it anyways. So that
would be a third level. So
those kind of go together. So those kind of go together. That a person is just denying the importance of Hashem and religion or the presence of all of those things. So that person might lose their privileges of being Jewish, in which case maybe there really is Meikar Adin not permit. So most assume as manazeh that such people don't exist. Right. That most people assume that nowadays everyone falls into the category of violating things b'teyavo because they have desires to, or because they don't even realize that it's really a problem. You are strict and eat kosher, and I'm not so strict and I eat not kosher. Right? So such people exist. So that leads to issues of, so what is this issue of giving kibudim or not giving kibudim? Should one give honors to such people or not? And different communities are going to have different standards on that. And every shul has to set their own standards based on what their situation in their shul is, what they're trying to accomplish in their shul, what other options exist. All of that plays into the cheshbon that a rabbi has to work on with his congregants just to figure out what exactly are the standards.
Can you walk to shul with a cane?
Questionable. Depends on exactly what the situation is. I mean, without
even within an area.
No. The point in that story was that's just an extreme case that the rabbi doesn't hold of the eruv, and therefore said in my shul we're not going to hold of the eruv. And even though a person and then found out a person used the cane to get to shul, so he. Even though there might be room to be lenient, even if there is no eruv, that's just to show how extreme the position is in that situation.
Right.
But each shul has to set their own standards. So I remember once having a discussion with Rav Schechter about this issue, and he mentioned that he was the rabbi for a few years in Paramus, in a shul in Paramus, in Dinek. So he told me that the rule in his shul was that anybody that they would give aliyahs to people who were mechal le'Shabbos. But only after the first seven. I mean, the first seven aliyahs would go only to people who were Shomer Shabbos, and then they would give later aliyahs to other people. So he had a fellow who would come for Yahrzeit. He had Yahrzeit many times during the year, a wealthy person, and he was always getting the eighth aliyah. So after a little while, he asked around, why am I only getting the eighth aliyah? And the person told him very nicely that, the reason was the first seven aliyahs are reserved for people who are Shomer Shabbos, and you have your store open on Shabbos, so it's nothing personal. You could have more aliyahs. You could add in aliyahs on Shabbos. So he said, it's nothing personal, but that's just the rule that we have here. So the person says, and this is, you have to know Rav Schechter a little bit, as he's telling me the story, he begins crying, and says, does this person realize? I never realized that. I thought this was all just antiquated customs. I didn't realize that you take this so seriously. But now that I see you take this so seriously, I'm now going to close my store on Shabbos. Right, such things exist, and then he quotes. Rav Schechter also quoted me a story from Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg that they went out, that that they, Rav Hillel Yaakov Weinberg was one of the poskei hador in the 50s, 60s. He was Rav Aaron Cutler's chavrusa in Slobodka. He was older. He recruited. There's a whole story there. So he ended up staying in Europe after the war, and he was the Rav in Switzerland, and he also taught in university. So he had these non-religious university students. So he, so the story goes that people went to him, a couple went to him and says, they weren't religious, but they're a Jewish couple, and says, Rabbi, would you officiate at our marriage? So he said, I would, but you should just know I have the following rule, and that is that if you, I only will officiate at a marriage if the couple goes to the mikvah and promises that they will keep the laws of Taras HaMishpacha going forward. So the couple said, well, we're, that's not really where we're holding right now, so we're going to leave. You know, okay, thanks. So Rechil Yaakov Weinberg said, okay, it's no hard feelings. That's you know. So then they came back to him 2 weeks later and said, we never realized that these laws are actually really binding at all today, but we see that somebody as sophisticated as you still cares about it so much, we've decided that we're going to keep the laws of Taras HaMishpacha. Right? So that is the... And there's one more story also along these lines that I remember when I was going... I asked these questions when I was trying to figure out, you know, when I was moving to Phoenix, when I first became a rabbi. I remember having a discussion with Rabbi Willig, Mordechai Willig, and he told me that he had a member of his shul that used to be in Rabbi Norman Lamb's shul in Springfield, Massachusetts. Before Rabbi Lamb was the president of YU, he was the rabbi at the Jewish Center of Manhattan. And before he was the rabbi at the Jewish Center of Manhattan, he was the rabbi for a few years in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is actually the shul that my uncle was the rabbi in before, early on in his career as well, in Congregation Kadima in Springfield, Massachusetts, which used to have a pretty robust Jewish community. So there was a fellow who was driving in for Kaddish. He came in on Shabbos from Holyoke, which is one of the suburbs of Springfield, which itself also had a Jewish community at one time. And Rabbi Lamb, in one of his drashas, said that it's better for a person to miss shul and not say Kaddish for a parent than to drive into shul on Shabbos. And this person was so taken aback by this that he realized, I didn't realize that Shabbos is so important. He became himself Shomer Shabbos, and now he's a member in... Rabbi Willig told me he's a member of the shul in Riverdale. So you can see how all of those equations could go either way. Meaning,
I would say
the guy. One second, the guy in the carpet store could have just as easily said, "Oh, I want nothing to do with this. Get lost, and I'm leaving." Right? Or right? All of those go either way, and that's why it takes a lot of chachma, a lot of wisdom, to try to figure out where this should roll.
When
so that is
came,
what.
What
about a king?
A king.
Because you're carrying the cane.
Yeah,
no, the point is he didn't hold of the Erev. So because he didn't hold of the...
I thought you said that even within an Erev.
No. So this rabbi who didn't hold of the Erev said, even though you're carrying within an Erev, I don't hold of the Erev, so therefore you're carrying on Shabbos. I said it's extreme, but he's trying to establish the standards for his community. Okay, so... Anyways, so getting back over here, so Rav Moshe goes through so this issue, meaning there's nothing. So the question was, can we have this doctor who's married to a non-Jew? Can we have this doctor open the aron? So Rav Moshe takes a step back and says, like, you realize there's no real halachos for who can open an eruv, right? You can have anybody open an eruv, but it is a kavod. So the only issue really is a question of chanifa, right? Are we giving false flattery to this person simply because we want his money and we want him to be nice to our community and treat the members of our shul, right? Is that considered appropriate or is that considered inappropriate? So all of it would all be in the same category, but they were just asking specifically about this. But we can extend it to: is it appropriate or inappropriate to honor somebody at a shul dinner that isn't that is Mechal Shabbos, or is it? Or how about the following case? Let's say you want to honor your state senator, who does many things to help the shul, but then lo and behold, your state senator happens to be Jewish, right? So. Does that then mean that you shouldn't or not? Right. So all of these fall in here. So the way Rav Moshe comes down, I see you're already beginning to run out of time a little bit. But the way Rav Moshe establishes the prohibition of Chanifa, he establishes it really as not being honest, not telling the truth.
Is that connected to getting the das or not considering it? Because you're not tripping that guy. I think
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah,
my wife's always
shaking like that. Fine. To represent the Torah as a way that maybe it shouldn't be represented. So Rav Moshe says, first of all, so Rav Moshe actually establishes that there's three issues when it comes to Hanifa. So one is to actually falsify the Torah, to seemingly imply that the Torah said, or not just imply, but to say outright that the Torah says something which it doesn't say. So Rav Moshe says that was the issue with Agrippas. That by Agrippas, they were telling him something which was wrong. And that's the reason that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed as a result, because they were falsifying the Torah. And Rav Moshe says, and that's why you need a proof to say that it's not Yehorig Valyavar, that one doesn't have to give their life instead of doing this. Rav Moshe says, if you're actually falsifying the Torah explicitly, so then you do have to give your life up. That is considered Yehorig Valyavar. You would have that problem. So he goes through these cases that we've had and says, well, so you're not really lying. You're not really saying the Torah didn't say what it didn't say. So for instance, the story in the Sefes Nedarim with Ula, who told the guy, you did okay, he never actually said that murder was okay. He slid around that issue. And that's why he did violate Hanifa, but because his life was endangered, was permissible. Right, so he slid around it, and it was permissible. So he didn't actually explicitly say something that the Torah said, which didn't exist. But if it wasn't for the fact that his life was in danger, that would have been prohibited, because he was kind of implying that what this person did was okay, when really it shouldn't have been okay. And then Rav Moshe on the second page that I gave you, he does quote this story about Yaakov and explains that okay, well, when it comes to Yaakov, He wasn't explicitly lying to Esau, because he wasn't explicitly saying what he did okay and what he didn't do, or that was not okay. He was simply giving praise to Esau, which was inappropriate if not for the fact that Yaakov was trying to save his life. But Rav Moshe says, when it comes to this doctor, so everybody knows what the story is with this doctor. Everybody knows that he's married to a non-Jew. We're not saying that it's okay that he be married to a non-Jew. And then Rav Moshe says, and we're also only giving him psicha. We're only letting him open the aron. But to give him more than that, so Rav Moshe says, I don't know, maybe it would be a good idea to not give him more than that. He's saying, you're not in violation of Hanifa, because that kind of fits the standards. He's a very nice guy. He helps the community. He gives money to the community. He's very supportive of those kinds of things. But he's not a model citizen, so therefore we'll give him that, but we're not going to give him that. We're not going to go beyond, or one should stop himself from going beyond that. That is the suggestion that that Rav Moshe has.
Yeah? How does one decide, like, how do the Mepharshim distinguish between flattery and honor in these cases?
So there is an article that anybody from contemporary, the RGJ Journal from a couple of years ago by Rabbi Al Cohn. So he actually goes on for quite a while at the end with that issue. So how does one work that out? And there he kind of gives his own story, his own interpretation, that you have to figure out, are you honoring such a person? His distinction is to let a person open the aron, where it's not really considered, it's a kavod, but it's not really, you're not holding him up as a model to the community, as opposed to an honoree at a dinner is being held as a model citizen for the community. So that's his distinction that he gives. To actually carry this out in practice is complicated, right? That's one of the complicated issues that we have. At what point do we say, all right, that's not really a covenant, and this person does do things, and therefore we want to be kind to him, and we want him to be kind to us, and right. We'll work this out. Yeah. And he makes that point. He says it might be true that the members of the shul know exactly what's going on. Everybody knows he's a doctor. He wants to. We need his help. We'll give him this, and everybody knows exactly what the equation is. But does really everybody? Do the children of the community know what the equation is? The children of the community will look at this and say, "Oh, look at that! He's married to a non-Jew, and he gets honored like everybody else."
Children too, with cleanup and stuff. You know, you want to raise them.
Right, so how does one, where does one make that distinction? Where does one divide the line? So you need people with, you know.
Is there the variable of maybe a tekinish and ishba that the person, you know, he might know it's not allowed to marry a non-Jew, but
yeah, so
he grew up in such a way that
right. So we discussed that there's that plays in, and that might play in with Rav Moshe's cheshbon. Everybody understands what the story is with him. But on the other hand, to hold him up as a model citizen in the community is a more complicated thing. Even if he is a tinuk shenishva, even if he
nobody knows that the honoree by a dinner is not really honoring him.
So that's his point. So that's his point. Really, everybody knows that. That's Rabbi Cohn's point. That really everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that. I mean, that's what a dinner's about. You know.
Really, my kids know that. My you know.
Your kids don't know he's married to a non-Jew either.
What?
Your kids don't know he's married to a non-Jew either because they're just little kids.
Really?
Yeah. I put down on the bottom, you know, the disclaimer.
Or they won't know later on, or they won't recognize later on. Oh, wait a second, he's like that, but 10 years ago, yeah. So he's developing as common as good practices is to set the bar at a high point. That doesn't mean that's the bar, and there aren't going to be any exceptions to the rule, but to set the bar as we're going to only honor people that are model citizens. And you know, and where does that settle? I mean, again, we gave an example before of, let's say a person is your state senator and you want to honor him at dinner, but he happens to be Jewish, right? So that person's not necessarily being held up as a model citizen. He's being thanked for his, right? So that might be that would be a mitigating factor. But it's still, you know, these are tough trials that come up.
I look at just two